Chapter 8. Xerox and Lisa. Graphical User Interfaces. A New Baby. The Apple II took the company from Jobs' garage to the pinnacle of a new industry. Its sales rose dramatically, from 2,500 units in 1977 to 210,000 in 1981. But Jobs was restless. The Apple II could not remain successful forever, and he knew that no matter how much he had done to package it, from power cord to case, it would always be seen as Wozniak's masterpiece. He needed his own machine. More than that, he wanted a product that would, in his words, make a dent in the universe. At first, he hoped that the Apple III would play that role. It would have more memory, the screen would display 80 characters across rather than 40, and it would handle uppercase and lowercase letters. Indulging his passion for industrial design, Jobs decreed the size and shape of the external case, and he refused to let anyone alter it, even as committees of engineers added more components to the circuit boards. The result was piggybacked boards with poor connectors that frequently failed. When the Apple III began shipping in May 1980, it flopped. Randy Wigginton, one of the engineers, summed it up. The Apple III was kind of like a baby conceived during a group orgy. And later, everybody had this bad headache. And there's this bastard child, and everyone says, "It's not mine." By then, Jobs had distanced himself from the Apple III and was thrashing about for ways to produce something more radically different. At first, he flirted with the idea of touch screens, but he found himself frustrated. At one demonstration of the technology, he arrived late, fidgeted a while, then abruptly cut off the engineers in the middle of their presentation with a brusque, "Thank you." They were confused. "Would you like us to leave?" one asked. Jobs said yes, then berated his colleagues for wasting his time. Then he and Apple hired two engineers from Hewlett-Packard to conceive a totally new computer. The name Jobs chose for it would have caused even the most jaded psychiatrist to do a double take: the Lisa. Other computers had been named after daughters of their designers, but Lisa was a daughter Jobs had abandoned and had not yet fully admitted was his. "Maybe he was doing it out of guilt," said Andrea Cunningham, who worked at Regis McKenna on public relations for the project. "We had to come up with an acronym so that we could claim it was not named after Lisa the child." The one they reverse-engineered was Local Integrated Systems Architecture, and despite being meaningless, it became the official explanation for the name. Among the engineers, it was referred to as LISA, Invented Stupid Acronym. Years later, when I asked about the name, Jobs admitted simply, "Obviously, it was named for my daughter." The Lisa was conceived as a $2,000 machine based on a 16-bit microprocessor rather than the 8-bit one used in the Apple II. Without the wizardry of Wozniak, who was still working quietly on the Apple II, the engineers began producing a straightforward computer with a conventional text display, unable to push the powerful microprocessor to do much exciting stuff. Jobs began to grow impatient with how boring it was turning out to be. There was, however, one programmer who was infusing the project with some life: Bill Atkinson. He was a doctoral student in neuroscience who had experimented with his fair share of acid. When he was asked to come work for Apple, he declined. But then Apple sent him a non-refundable plane ticket, and he decided to use it and let Jobs try to persuade him. "We are inventing the future," Jobs told him at the end of a 3-hour pitch. "Think about surfing on the front edge of a wave. It's really exhilarating. Now think about dog paddling at the tail end of that wave. It wouldn't be anywhere near as much fun. Come down here and make a dent in the universe." Atkinson did. with his shaggy hair and droopy mustache that did not hide the animation in his face, Atkinson had some of Woz's ingenuity along with Jobs's passion for awesome products. His first job was to develop a program to track a stock portfolio by auto-dialing the Dow Jones service, getting quotes, then hanging up. I had to create it fast because there was a magazine ad for the Apple II showing a hubby at the kitchen table looking at an Apple screen filled with graphs of stock prices, and his wife is beaming at him. But there wasn't such a program, so I had to create one. Next, he created for the Apple II a version of Pascal, a high-level programming language. Jobs had resisted, thinking that BASIC was all the Apple II needed, but he told Atkinson, "Since you're so passionate about it, I'll give you 6 days to prove me wrong." He did, and Jobs respected him ever after. By the fall of 1979, Apple was breeding three ponies to be potential successors to the Apple II workhorse. There was the ill-fated Apple III, there was the Lisa project, which was beginning to disappoint Jobs, and somewhere off Jobs' radar screen, at least for the moment, there was a small skunkworks project for a low-cost machine that was being developed by a colorful employee named Jeff Raskin, a former professor who had taught Bill Atkinson. Raskin's goal was to make an inexpensive computer for the masses that would be like an appliance, a self-contained unit with computer, keyboard, monitor, and software all together, and have a graphical interface. He tried to turn his colleagues at Apple onto a cutting-edge research center right in Palo Alto that was pioneering such ideas.